Herald of Truth, program number 270.
The words house and home are not necessarily synonymous, especially in this day of condominium, apartment, and house trailer living. The gifted writer Channing Pollock once said, "Home is the most enduring of all earthly establishments," and he might have added that the home is Earth's oldest institution. The home, with its powerful ties of love and devotion, was ordained of God to promote the physical and spiritual welfare of mankind. I hope you'll share the next few minutes with me as we think of the importance of our homes and the attacks that are being made upon them.
How shall the young secure their hearts and guard their lives from sin? Thy word the choicest rules imparts to keep the conscience clean.
This is Herald of Truth. In a moment, you'll hear another presentation of Bible Truth by Batzel Barrett Baxter, who begins today a new series of discussions on the theme, Families in Crisis. For this hour, Mr. Baxter has chosen to speak on the subject, A House or a Home?
He hideth my soul in the cleft of the rock that shadows a dry, thirsty land. He hideth my life in the depths of his love and covers me there with his hand. And covers me there with his hand.
And now, here is Batzel Barrett Baxter speaking on the subject, A House or a Home. Mr. Baxter.
The late Edgar A. Guest, whose poems appeared in numerous newspapers across the country a generation ago, was not noted for the elegance of his style, but for the warmth of his message. In one of his most loved poems, he wrote, "It takes a heap of living in a house to make it home, a heap of sun and shadder, and you sometimes have to roam afore you really appreciate the things you left behind, and hunger for 'em somehow with 'em allus on your mind. It don't make any difference how rich you get to be, how much your chairs and tables cost, how great your luxury. It ain't home to you, though it be the palace of a king, until somehow your soul is sort of wrapped round everything." The poem continues and ultimately reaches its climax with these lines. "You've got to love each brick and stone from cellar up to dome. It takes a heap of living in a house to make it home." Unfortunately, Edgar A. Guest's outlook, once widely accepted and appreciated, I think, has been relegated to a dim past by millions of modern Americans. Home has become practically equivalent to house in the minds of millions of people today. For generations, the word home has been the symbol of everything that is beautiful and good. Memories from childhood are rooted in the homestead or cottage or bungalow where we were raised. My earliest memories go back to a little frame bungalow at 717 North Victoria Street in a Midwestern city, where my earliest years were spent with loving parents and where I first began to discover the world about me. Many of us have a deep appreciation for the words of Thomas Jefferson, "The happiest moments of my life have been the few which I've passed at home in the bosom of my family." Christians especially, I think, have long believed that the family home is intended to be a little corner of the kingdom of God, a place where all the members of the family may grow together into Christian maturity as they strive to walk in the footsteps of Christ. We're all products of our own homes, and in turn, we're the examples for the homes of our children. Everything stems from the home. The home contributes much to the churches and schools and service organizations of society. The very first human arrangement on the face of the earth was the home established by Adam and Eve. And since that time, the home's been the basic social unit, the very foundation of God's plan for mankind. As the home goes, so goes the nation, for the nation is ultimately a product of our homes. This has been demonstrated, I think, over and over again through the rise and fall of various nations. This was especially true of the Roman Empire. The home serves to satisfy many of our most basic needs. Harold Lunger has suggested that the home serves to provide satisfaction for the basic physical needs of life, to provide the affection and emotional security which every individual requires, and to learn to live together as members of a democratic group earnestly seeking the Christian way of life. This threefold statement of values, while not exhaustive, I suppose, does suggest some of the basic values of the home. In a moment, I want you to examine with me the nature of certain things and situations that must be classed as enemies of the home. But first, this hymn of faith from our chorus.
Encamped along the hills of light, ye Christian soldiers, rise and press the battle ere the night shall veil the glowing skies. Against the foe in vales below, let all our strength be hurled. Faith is the victory we know that overcomes the world. Faith is the victory. Faith is the victory. Oh, glorious victory that overcomes the world. His banner over us is love, our sword the word of God. We tread the road the saints above with shouts of triumph trod. By faith they like a whirlwind's breath swept on o'er every fear. The faith by which they conquered death is still our shining shield. Faith is the victory. Faith is the victory. Oh, glorious victory that overcomes the world. To him that overcomes the foe, white raiment shall be given. Before the angels he shall know his name confessed in heaven. Then onward from the hills of light, our hearts with love aflame, we'll vanquish all the hosts of night in Jesus' conquering name. Faith is the victory. Faith is the victory. Oh, glorious victory that overcomes the world.
The thoughtful observer can clearly see certain enemies which are working diligently to destroy the home. Some of these are impersonal influences of the age in which we live. Others are persons with ideologies which lead them to want consciously and designedly to destroy the home. Robert Arnott speaks of the impersonal forces that tend to work against the home when he says, "The typical characteristic of today's homes is that they have degenerated into efficiently run hotels. Members of the family can drop in, have a shower, eat a quick meal, and rush off their separate ways with scarcely a word for the other members of the establishment." Vance Packard, in his impressive new book, A Nation of Strangers, says that America has become a land of nomads, a nation of men and women who are rootless, isolated, indifferent to community problems, and shallow in personal relationships. In mentioning the shifting population, Packard includes not only the obvious categories such as military men and migrant workers, but also athletes, actors, long-distance bus and truck drivers, salesmen, construction workers, and airline stewardesses. He mentions further that blacks flee the inner cities and whites flee the blacks. People displaced by urban renewal or superhighways are forced to pull up stakes. So very often are executives transferred to distant cities. The aged migrate voluntarily to the sunshine areas of Florida or California or Arizona. The young leave home to escape their parents. Packard's statistics are quite impressive. I quote, "The average American moves about 14 times in his lifetime, compared with 5 times for the Japanese. About 40 million Americans, that's one-fifth of our population, change their addresses at least once a year. In many cities, more than 35% of the population move every year. The wives of many managers have had to move their households 20 times in the course of their marriages. Some 6 million Americans now live in mobile homes. Even though these homes are not often moved, their occupants feel a minimum commitment to both home and community. At any given time, half of the 18 to 22-year-olds in hundreds of towns are living away from home. Many of these never come back except to visit." And then among Packard's conclusions is his belief that the anonymity resulting from mobility fosters nomadic values, especially hedonism and a tendency to live for the moment. He also says that there seem to be increasing numbers of people who are indifferent to all close associations. I've quoted from a review in Time magazine. In addition to these rather impersonal influences that affect adversely the American home, there are certain avowed enemies of the institution of the family. The Communist Manifesto speaks of the abolition of the family. It goes on to say the bourgeois claptrap about the family, about the hallowed correlation of parent and child, becomes disgusting. From a very different quarter, Margaret Mead is quoted as saying, "Urgently needed are devices by which communities can take over for parents and give ethical direction and content to children's lives. This will mean delegation of the family's role in moral training to the community, state, nation, and ultimately the world." This would, of course, do away with the family almost entirely. Expressions such as the new culture, modern lifestyles, and so on, are used to describe relationships which are the antithesis of God's plan for the home and family. For example, a book club advertises open marriage, a new lifestyle for couples, among its current offerings. Whereas I've not read the book, it seems quite logical to assume that its recommendation, open marriage, is far removed from the basic attitudes concerning the home which have served as the foundation for making our nation great. Also, they're obviously quite wide of the biblical standards for the home. Dr. Eric Riss, a Manhattan psychotherapist who's been counseling troubled married couples for more than 2 decades, considers this book, Open Marriage, A New Lifestyle for Couples, as, and I'm quoting him, nonsense, dangerous nonsense. He says concerning the book, "I get very upset by seemingly simple solutions such as this because people take them seriously and then get very disappointed when they don't work." He then points out a key passage in the book and refers to it as pure nonsense. The passage quoted says, "In open marriage, you can come to know, enjoy, and share comradeship with others of the opposite sex besides your mate. These relationships enhance and augment the marital relationship in turn. These outside relationships may, of course, include sex. That's completely up to the partners involved." A few years ago, it would have been unrealistic to think of a book advocating such anti-Christian practices as being advertised by a reputable book club and enjoying a large sale. Obviously, this kind of writing is destructive to the ideals of the Christian home, which serve as the basic social unit of our society. We'll talk about foundations of the home, solid foundations, in just a moment. Our young people return now to sing, In Heavenly Love Abiding.
In heavenly love abiding, no change my heart shall fear, and safe in such confining, for nothing changes here, the storm may storm.
After examining some of the trends of our day and reading some of the nonsense that's being written concerning moral behavior, it's refreshing to turn to the Bible and read again the great passages which establish God's plan for marriage in the home. Let's begin with the earliest of them all, back in Genesis chapter 2, where we read, "And the man said, This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh." Several thousand years later, while Jesus was here on the earth, the Pharisees came to him and, trying him, asked, "Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause?" And he answered and said, "Have ye not read that he who made them from the beginning made them male and female, and said, For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh?" And then Jesus added, "So that they are no more two, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder." The Pharisees then probed further on the subject of divorce, to which Jesus responded, "From the beginning it hath not been so. And I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery, and he that marrieth her when she is put away committeth adultery." That's Matthew chapter 19. As another of the solid foundations upon which the Christian home's been built for centuries, listen to these words from the Apostle Paul. "Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for it. Even so ought husbands also to love their own wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. Nevertheless do ye also severally love each one his own wife, even as himself. And let the wife see that she fear, or reverence, her husband. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but nurture them in the chastening and admonition of the Lord." That's Ephesians chapters 5 and part of chapter 6. This last reference to the responsibility of fathers leads me to want to suggest that it's time for the men of America to assume their share of the moral and spiritual duties of the home. Too many men have tried to delegate all responsibility in spiritual matters to women. It seems that our theme song has been, "Take my wife, and let her be consecrated, Lord, to thee." In such a situation, when children grow up, they follow the example of the father rather than of the mother. They'll almost certainly regard spiritual matters as of trivial importance. A godly home here on earth provides the preparation needed to obtain a heavenly home hereafter. In fact, I know of nothing that'll do as much to ensure the salvation of one's soul as to be reared in a truly Christian home. During the last few years, one marriage in four has ended in divorce. But among those families where husband and wife attend worship together, the proportion is only 1 in 57. With Christ as the center, couples have at least 12 times as much chance of building a happy home. Christ and his teachings must be the foundation upon which the home is established. And this belief must have been strong enough to lead them to turn from the world and its sinful ways and philosophies, to follow in the steps of Jesus. This faith must have led them to make known their commitment to Christ before their fellow men, and it must have led them to humble themselves in the submissive act of baptism for the forgiveness of their sins. Then, as Christians, the faith that led them to obey Christ's initial commands of pardon leads them to live each day as nearly like Christ would live it as they can. In time, the children will be old enough to believe in Christ for themselves, and then will follow the same pattern, the ancient pattern revealed in the Scriptures and known among Christians for nearly 2,000 years. And then the children will themselves be members of an even greater family than the family that they've known here on earth, God's family. May our relationships in our homes here on earth help prepare us for that more wonderful home to come, our home in heaven with God and Christ and the worthies of all the ages. To that end, may the Lord bless you and keep you.
This has been Herald of Truth with Batso Barrett Baxter. Mr. Baxter is chairman of the Department of Bible at David Lipscomb College in Nashville, Tennessee. For a free copy of today's message entitled A House or a Home, write to Mr. Baxter, Abilene, Texas. Ask for program number 270. That's program 270. Thank you for being with us today, and our special thanks for your many letters during the month of October. Your words of encouragement have been most helpful to us. As for the many inquiries received from those who are ill or troubled or problem-ridden or bereaved, we trust our response has been helpful to you. If you have a Bible-related question or a question dealing with some deep personal concern, please feel free to write. Mr. Baxter and his staff will be happy to be of assistance to you, and when you write, may we suggest further that you ask to be enrolled in a Bible correspondence course. The entire course will come to you without cost or obligation. Write at once to Mr. Baxter, Abilene, Texas. In requesting a copy of today's program, ask for program number 270. You can see Herald of Truth on television. Be sure to check your local TV listings for time and channel. Herald of Truth has been presented by Churches of Christ and interested individuals around the world and is produced by the Highland Church of Christ in Abilene, Texas. Next week at this time, the Lord willing, Batso Barrett Baxter will present the second in this series of discussions dealing with families in crisis. His subject will be A Man in the House. Please plan to be with us. This is Brett Allison.